Hi, and welcome to Dutch, the podcast. My name is Mike. Right there is Tom Byfoot. He's the publisher and the grand poobah over at DutchTheMedia.com. And at DutchTheMedia.com, you'll find this podcast and all kinds of other great publications out of the Dutch community and about the Netherlands. All kinds of fantastic resources like De Krant, the newspaper. Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Hi, Mike. I'm doing very well. Thanks for that introduction. Wonderful to see visitors come to our website at DutchTheMedia.com, but of course also to read our publications, our books, and our magazines and our newspaper.
Quite honestly, Tom, I had rehearsed a song for that, but I lost my nerve last minute. But that's the closest I could get to a real fancy intro for you there.
Not to mention your voice, right?
I will recommend that you go because all kinds of great stuff, including Tom's book, Hiding in Plain Sight, right there.
Thank you.
So listen, Tom, this today, by the way, please subscribe to the podcast anywhere you're listening to it or watching it, because you'll find, just like today, all kinds of great guests and incredible interviews that have to do with the Netherlands, about being Dutch in Canada and in America. And some really incredible people telling great stories. Today is no exception. Tom, I think emigrating for anybody is difficult. It has challenges no matter how exciting it is. And under some circumstances, it can be very difficult, especially if you're a child. And I think today's guests really have done something special.
Yeah, so we're talking to the author and the illustrator of a children's book about a little girl, 5-year-old girl, who immigrates to Canada from the Netherlands in the very early 1950s. The book is written by Julia Sinkey Niels and illustrated by her daughter, Abby Sinkey. They live in Alberta. And, you know, it's interesting to see how long that Dutch heritage often lingers, especially in certain communities where there's a lot of other Dutch people. I lost count, but I believe that Abby, the illustrator, is fourth generation Dutch. They basically tell the story of their great grandparents' journey in children's book form, dedicated to children.
What a really unique idea. That's very cool.
So, yeah, why don't we listen to them first, and then we can always catch up after we've done the interview.
Thanks, Tom. Let's do that.
So we're welcoming to Dutch the podcast today, Julia and Abby Sinkey. And I don't know if that's how you pronounce your name in English, but that's the way I would say it in Dutch. And maybe that's how you say it in English as well. It's great to have you on the podcast. Together, you wrote and illustrated a book called Anna's Big Adventure, a 1950s Canada immigration story. Let's start by introducing yourselves. Who are we talking to in this episode?
Well, good morning, Tom. So in English, we say Sinkey, I guess, for our last name. So Julia Sinkey, but you're absolutely correct. In Dutch, it's Sinkey, of course. So I live in Picture Butte, Alberta. I'm married to Garrett Sinkey. He came to Canada as a 12-year-old in the 80s. So he's pretty fresh. And then we have four children. So two boys, 25 and 23. A daughter who's 19, and then a daughter who's 15. I'm an educational assistant. I work casual right now, but I've had positions in preschool, kindergarten, grade one, grade two. My husband was an advanced care paramedic and firefighter for the city of Lethbridge for about 20 years. He just retired from there, and being the Dutch businessman he is, we just started a trekking company, transport company, bought a semi, and we have an online business that sells floating pool and spa covers. So This past year, I've been learning bookkeeping and along with the educational assistant role. So that's us right now.
My name is Abby Sinkey. I graduated just 2 years ago now, and then I went straight to hair school. So I've been doing hairdressing kind of ever since I graduated, and I'm looking forward to getting married in July. My fiance is also from a Dutch family, so we share a lot of the same traditions that way. And yeah, I was very, very happy to draw these pictures for the book. It was very an exciting thing to do for or with my mom.
Wow, that's great. Congratulations on the upcoming wedding, Abby. That's great to hear. Okay, so we've already spoken about Dutch and being Dutch quite a bit. Now, you were both born in Canada, grew up in Canada, but still you have this strong Dutch heritage. Could you maybe expand on that a little? How Dutch are you? Where's that heritage come from?
Yeah, Tom. So the basis for my book also is that my great-grandparents came in the 1950s, but they came with their five youngest children and they left adult children behind in the Netherlands, my grandparents being those and my father as well. And so they ended up coming to Canada in the 60s. My mom came in the 60s as well as a three-year-old. My dad was 10. And they ended up settling in Chilliwack, BC. And so I was born in Chilliwack, BC. Two big families. My dad's from 11, my mom's from 13. So I'm one of 65 cousins on one side, and I'm the oldest of 78 on my mom's side. And so that's really special in itself. Very close knit. My two omas spoke English, but they threw a lot of Dutch into it. Especially my oma on my mom's side, she talked to anybody and everybody, Tom. She just loved everybody, and she didn't care. She threw in the Dutch words, and people kind of knew her around the community, just as a special lady. And so she really left her mark. She learned English well, but she still kept her accent, of course, all through the years. And so I just loved the sound of the language, and didn't really speak it myself. My parents.
Do you understand it still? Can you understand it?
Well, that's part of my story. My parents would speak it when they didn't want us to know, me and my siblings, to know what they were saying. And I knew some of the words from my omas, but at a church camp, I met my husband, and he had came as a 12-year-old. So he, at home, and still to this day, they speak Zeus. And I learned it. I picked it up. And so my mother-in-law speaks Zeus to me, and I speak English back, and
just to clarify for our listeners, Zeus, so Zeeland is one of the provinces of the Netherlands, and most provinces and most areas have their own special dialect, which are often even hard to understand for people from a different part of the country. So when you say Zeus, that's the dialect that's spoken in the part of the country where your grandparents came from.
Absolutely. And I liken it to maybe Newfoundland, right? Like we speak English, but when you get to Newfoundland, I've been there too. It's like, okay, this is English, but wow, it's a different dialect for sure. So Holland has those different dialects.
My fiance's family, they're from South Holland, Rotterdam area, that they speak the proper Dutch. So when I try to speak Dutch words to him, he always says, that's not how you say it. And I'm like, oh, I thought so, but...
So. Yeah, that's amazing. So you even speak some Dutch as well, Abby. That's surprising because I'd have to do the math, but third, fourth generation?
Yeah.
So, well, but her dad is born in the Netherlands, so she's technically second generation, the same as her mother, which is...
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and all my grandparents were born in Holland, and then my dad was. So ever since I was little, we always spent Saturday nights at my Oma and Opa's house. And with all the cousins and my aunts and uncles and my Oma and Opa would always speak Zeus. And so I would hear it a lot. And same story, my parents, if they didn't want their kids to know what we were saying, they would say it in Dutch. So we picked up quite fast on what they were trying to say.
That's quite the incentive, right?
Yes. To pick it up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've been to Holland three times now. And every time you go, you pick up more and more. So I can understand quite a bit of it. I don't always dare to speak it, but I'm able to get my point across.
Yeah, and you know, I recognize that. My kids are pretty much the same age. My youngest is 18 and the oldest is 26. When we go back to the Netherlands, it's amazing how quickly they become very fluent again. Sorry, I interrupted you to clarify about the Zeus. Maybe there's a little more, Julia?
Okay, so then I guess growing up, my two omas, I picked it up a little bit there. I worked in a Dutch bakery in high school, so really got a feel for it. Yeah, the tempoes and the vanilla slices.
Was that in Lethbridge? Sorry to interrupt you again.
Chilliwack, still Chilliwack, BC.
Okay.
It was called Sardis Bakery, and I don't think it's there anymore right now.
Okay, I was going to mention, because Chilliwack, of course, has a huge Dutch population, and one of our main advertisers for the newspaper, Holland Shopping Center, of course, are right on Yonge Street in Chilliwack. So just, I thought I'd give them a shout out.
I've been there, been shopping in there, So I met my husband, future husband, at a church camp and ended up in Lethbridge, Alberta. And so that's when I actually learned how to speak the Dutch language and I guess the Zeeuws dialect of it. From being close to his family. So now I've been 26 years in the Lethbridge area, still travel to Chilliwack to visit, of course, family. In the meantime, when I moved here, my dad was called to the ministry. So he was a school teacher. And so when I got married 26 years ago, the rest of my family moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he went to seminary. Yeah. He was in a church in Iowa, then a church in St. Catharines, Ontario, and now close to Red Deer. So I feel like I've been to every Dutch epicenter.
I was just going to say, you're rattling off all the Dutch centers. And we've even, I don't know if he was in Pella when he was in Iowa or in Orange City or where he was.
Close to Rock Valley.
Okay, so we visited Pella even on this podcast. We spoke to people from Pella and Grand Rapids. We've got a podcast coming up with a professor at Calvin College soon. So, it's all recognizable. Yeah. I mean, Chilliwack, Lethbridge, Red Deer, all very much centers of Dutch settlement. Hey, let's get to the book.
Absolutely.
You were talking about how big your family has become since coming to Canada, and there are a million Canadians of Dutch descent, as we all know and often repeat. Now, a lot of stories, a million stories, really, if you think about it, and a lot of them have been told in simple, straightforward book form, like autobiographies, but some people have taken a different tack. For example, we spoke on the podcast to Rosemary Sloot from London, Ontario, with her beautiful paintings, sketching her family's immigrant experience. There's even comic books, I should say graphic novels. We spoke to a pastor called Arthur Bors about his Dutch Canadian childhood in St. Catharines, Ontario, and he, what I would call a creative nonfiction. But you chose to tell the story through the eyes of a five-year-old girl in a children's book. Why did you choose that particular way of telling the story?
Really good question, and it's probably three or four different things. Being an educational assistant, I've worked a lot in kindergarten, grade one and two, and I love that age. And they soak up ideas, Tom, but they also can be taught empathy. They can really, at that age, they've got a vivid imagination, and it's easier for them to put themselves in someone else's shoes, I would say. So I kind of gravitate toward that age, having worked with kids that age. And then ending up in the Lethbridge area where I knew my great grandparents had first settled and I kind of knew the story. But when I read through my family reunion book that I had, my youngest great aunt was five when she came and she tells a bit of the history. And so I thought, okay, she was five. She was on this boat. What did that feel like? What did that look like? And then driving around in this area for a few years, I've just had a sense of gratitude to, there's so many successful businesses and farms and we live in beautiful homes and we drive nice vehicles. And then the contrast was I kept seeing in the countryside, these little brown chicken coop looking houses. And there's some photography of it in the back of the book. Finally, I said to my husband, what are these chicken coops? He said, well, you know, a lot of the immigrants from Europe stayed in there in the 1950s, they would contract out to a farmer and there'd be these little houses on the property. And it was such a contrast in my mind to where we are today and to where they must have began. And so I didn't want to lose that sense of gratitude, the sense of hard work, tribute to the women who came. A lot of them following their husbands came with their children and had to settle in a new place and learn a new language. So I wanted to preserve that for my children and hopefully one day grandchildren. So that's
how great.
Where the book came together. Now I started probably in about 2018. I interviewed, so I had the written history of my own family. I have diary excerpts from on the ship from my great uncle, who was 21 at the time, which is quite special to read, you know, day by day, kind of on the ship itself. And so in about 2018, I interviewed a lady who was 8 when she came, and she just told me so many stories, and I wrote them down because it was an idea forming in my head. And then my aunt, who did the illustrations, also her mother-in-law. So we interviewed her as well. And then what happened was, a couple of years ago, the lady who was 8 that I interviewed when she came, she passed away. And I thought, okay, now I really need to put this together, because this generation of people are, they're no longer with us, right? And so that really kind of lit the fire to get it done. Now, my aunt, speaking of big family, she's the illustrator along with Abby. She's only 5 years older than me. Because I'm the oldest grandchild and she's the youngest child of the family, I call her my auntster. We joke that she's my aunt's sister because we're only 5 years apart. It was so fun to work with her. She had done a previous book with me about Canada. We have a children's book about the different provinces and territories. She had drawn for beautiful. Let me give a shout out to her. Her drawing and painting is fantastic. She just does it as a hobby.
And so what's her name, Julia?
Jenny Van Herk.
Okay.
That's her married name. She's my mom's sister. Her maiden name is Den Hertog.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then so Abby ended up wanting to be a part of the project as well. Also loves art and painting and drawing. So they collaborated together. I would say I was a little bit nervous about two people. I mean, you get two styles. You get two different.
Well, I was going to ask. I was going to ask about that because it lists two illustrators, yeah. Abby and Jenny. So how
let
did
me
that
pass work? That question to Abby and yeah.
Yeah. For me, I thought it went very seamless. It was great. I mean, we've chatted about art in the past when I've gone to Auntie Jenny's house. And I thought it went very well. So she had done a few of the pages, so I was able to kind of play off of what she had already done. She had, for example, tulips that represented Holland, and then she had the Alberta Wild Rose that represented when they were in Alberta here. So I was able to play off of that and kind of incorporate that into my art too. I added the flowers in there, and then I enjoyed more the drawing part and she enjoys more of the coloring part. So there was some pages where I did the drawing and the outlining and then she went back in and she did the coloring. And I think that the book blends very well. You can't really tell.
Well, that's why I was going to ask, because I can't tell that there's two artists at work here. It's very much one piece. And maybe we'll get back to the book and the emotions soon, but while we're talking about the illustrations, So you told me just now that you've been to Holland a number of times, because when I'm looking at it, I'm also a recent immigrant, relatively recent. You know, that little brick house in which Anna grew up, I've seen hundreds, if not thousands of those. You capture that so well. So is that from being there? Is that from images? How did you get it to look so genuine?
Yeah, that particular picture is from my Auntie Jenny. So I didn't do that one, but that is actually the exact house that my Opa and Oma first lived in after they got married. So I think it was from 1969. And that was from a picture, I believe.
We had a photograph of my in-laws' first house when they got married in Kruiningen in the Netherlands. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kruiningen. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, Do you find, Julia, maybe as well, you tell the story in text, obviously, but as a children's book should be, there's these colorful illustrations. Is there something the illustrations add that you could capture in text?
Absolutely, Tom. And I told my aunt at the outset, I'm not doing this project without you, because especially for a children's book, even for adults, a picture's worth 1,000 words, right? And so, especially for kids, the color, you know, when you see the tulip fields in Holland, that color just jumps out at you. And so in the book, it almost looks like you're there, like just the way she can blend color and make it pop is so captivating for children. And then we added a little teddy bear into the story, which isn't part of any story or history.
But, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, but just to kind of capture kids' interest and to open conversation about, you know, if you move somewhere, if you sleep over and you take your stuffy with you, does that help you feel better? Because kids really relate to that kind of idea, right? So we ended up popping the little teddy bear into the story as well. Yeah, and maybe for our YouTube viewers, I'll just hold up the cover. So my aunt drew the top half and Abby drew the bottom half of this front cover. And I just love that because you really can't tell that there's two artists that work here, you know? So, yeah. So, no, that worked out really well with the three of us collaborating. And yeah, you asked about the illustrations. Kids and adults alike, they just really add to the story. We could add special things in, like the photograph of my in-law's house that was drawn in. A lady from my church, she heard about the project, said, I have the trunk that my mom took as a girl, you know, like this big green trunk. And so we were able to get that photograph and draw that into the book. So there's just little special touches of things that went into it that we had from photographs that we could add into there.
There's a sign in my Opanoma's house that I was like, oh, in the house that they move into, I need to draw this little sign in there, just because every time I go to my Opanoma's house, I see this sign. And so I made sure to incorporate that in too. So that was really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a beautifully presented book. I loved going through it. And I don't have grandchildren yet, but, you know, it'd be a wonderful book I see for them when the time comes. Maybe we're talking about the book and the content. So maybe go back to that a little bit. You highlight in your book the emotions that Anna goes through during her journey and settling into Canada. Maybe high level the story arc and reflect a little bit on those emotions, because you spoke, as you said, to many women in your family about this. They must have shared some of that with you for you to base that on.
Right. And, you know, interviewing people that went through it as a child, I didn't immigrate myself. I didn't go through this experience myself, but I could feel their emotion when they told me the stories. And also the topic of emotions today in that age, 5, 6, 7, you know, in a school setting, we're talking about emotions a lot more than we ever did. Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling happy? Why are you feeling this way? You know, we're working through emotions like we didn't do 50, 60, 70 years ago. So kids are even more aware of the language, I would say. So that kind of became an afterthought to me as I wrote the storyline. I thought, what if I add that dimension of what a five-year-old is feeling at the time to make it relatable to kids today, and maybe to bring the story from 1950 to 2024, right? So what's the connection? And can teachers use this in the classroom as a talking point? So I also have a vivid imagination, so I could kind of put, you know, shut my eyes and be like, I'm standing on a boat, it's 1950, I'm a five-year-old girl, what am I feeling? Taking the emotions from the women I interviewed, and then how can I bring this to a five-year-old in a classroom today or a grandchild today and open a conversation? There's so many immigrants still coming into Canada, so many refugees coming into Canada. They're experiencing a lot of the same hardship and emotion and their children, right? So, yeah.
I was wondering if you'd heard from immigrants from other backgrounds, more recent immigrants to Canada after they've read the book.
Yeah. So I did a presentation in a grade one class and two grade two classes. And because I created a list of questions kind of at the back of the book, discussion questions, one of it was, have you moved from another country? Have you even moved to a new city or a new house, right? Not everybody's immigrated, of course, but, you know, kids can relate to moving and different things. And there were a few children in the classroom from Africa and recently from Africa. And so they did. They were able to really share and get the kids around them to get thinking, hey, this is not just an olden day story, you know, way back in the olden days. It became relatable to today. And that was so exciting to see. It really was. So yeah, it has made a connection with kids that are recent immigrants to Canada.
Well, and it's a universal experience, right? Almost everyone in Canada has at least one grandparent who immigrated, and then there's so many very recent immigrants. I'd like to get back a little bit to the experience of the women, because you mentioned that, and if you read up, for example, there's a big book called To All Our Children, which was published in the 80s. where they emphasize how hard it often was for the women, particularly. The men often went out to work, the women stayed at home, didn't speak English, took them a long time to even get a grasp of the English language, very homesick for family. If in your case, a lot of the family eventually did join, but there's also people whose families always stayed behind, and that was, you know, and in those days, you didn't just get on a plane and go back for a couple of weeks. So it's very hard. And then add to that, you're coming into completely different landscapes. Or if you're a farmer, you have to learn new farming methods. The climate is brutal, especially in Alberta. And then, you know, these hot summers, working in the fields, in the blazing sun. You've got these awful winters compared to what they were used to back home in Holland. Now, a lot of Dutch families fought through that. And a large proportion of the Dutch immigrants were a very strong faith. And this is highlighted to a certain extent in your book as well. I read this. I thought I'd just read the section where Anna talks about going to church on Sundays. And it says, on Sundays, the family did not hoe beets, hoeing beets. And even Anna, at 5 years old, had to help. They got a ride with another family to church. Here they read the Bible and sang Dutch psalms. Sundays were wonderful. Can you reflect on how important that strong faith was to the success eventually immigrants had? And then maybe also talk a little bit about how Dutch Canadians, or at least a subset of Dutch Canadians, still fit together because of that.
Absolutely. Tom, I'll jump back to the women, the hardship for the women, and then jump to the faith part. Absolutely. After that. There was...
Yes, it was a long question.
That's a lot to combine.
That it is.
The resounding reaction I got from different people we spoke to was the shock when they got here, especially for the women. They were used to running water in the Netherlands. Yeah, you know, just a clean and tidy. I kind of had made the contrast of the clean, tidy brick house and then this chicken coop looking thing. So there was shock at first, but there was this attitude of work hard, we're going to be brave, and we're going to make the best of this. And I would say that grit is continuing. It's continued through a lot of Dutch people I know, just that grit of we can work hard, we can change this, we can make this. I just imagine all these Dutch women cleaning all these houses and hanging up their nice curtains, gordijnen we call them, right?
Yeah.
Making for the children, especially making this feel like home, making this feel cozy. But it struck me when I listened to your podcast with Rosemary Sloat, how, you know, she said her mom was brave and hardworking, never complained, and then had some regret, you know, about making the journey to this new land and working hard here. And so I think a lot of women had that regret and fought through it and for their children and grandchildren, right? So I still see that same grit and determination today around me in the Dutch community. And I think it largely comes from those men and women who came and said, and maybe, Tom, it has something to do, I don't know, they had just gone through a world war. And, you know, maybe this is hard, this is a challenge, but this is not a world war. And so maybe looking at the bright side, being grateful, is a way to move on and then just pour your grit and energy in and make something come of it. And they did. Now their children and grandchildren are really benefiting from that hard work. But like you mentioned, it's especially hard for the women. And that also came through in the writings from my great aunts and uncles. It was really hard on mother. It was really hard on mother. And so I don't want our children and grandchildren to lose that admiration and respect for them and not to lose the struggle that it was, not to realize the struggle that it was. And then the faith piece. So I've also heard stories from the people around here, because they would drive from, you know, some of them quite far, farms that were, you know, isolated, but they would come together for Sundays and they could speak Dutch in a community again, and they could sing their Dutch songs, they could worship. And for a long time in Southern Alberta, there have been Dutch services. I mean, I've heard them still, right? So they kind of kept that up. But it was also, they would bring lunch, they would have a meal together, and they would trade for the week. So, you know, someone had outgrown a coat and some other family needed a coat. And these were hard times. You didn't have a lot. And someone needed a special appliance. And so it was the day to trade with each other. And it was really about community. I think that that's continued in a large way in a subset of Dutch Canadians. For myself, we go to a Reformed church. We go first of all to worship, secondly to learn from scripture, but third, it's about community. And technology has changed. I have a ladies' WhatsApp chat group, but still someone is saying, hey, I have this, you know, childhood item I'm not using anymore. Can anyone use it? Oh yeah, I'll take it. And we bring it to church. And I just drew a connection this week in my mind that maybe it's not exactly like what was happening back in the 1950s, but we've kind of continued that strong belief in worship is important. Getting together is important together. And we've carried it on. And so I do believe for many Dutch families that faith has stayed important. It sustained our ancestors who came here, and it's sustaining us today. Not necessarily Reformed churches. I have many Dutch friends that go to evangelical churches too, yeah. Right? But the fact that faith is important, learning from the scriptures together, and then being part of a community and a family. Not only do we have large families, we also have a large church family. And I believe that has carried on from the belief that they saw in it back then. It's definitely carried on, Tom.
Yeah, and I think that's something you see. You see it in Southern Ontario, you see it in Alberta, these strong groups. I don't know, Abby, if you went to Christian school or not, but I suspect you probably did. You see that, and also in the Fraser Valley, in the Chilliwack and the Abbotsford area. Well, hey, I think this has been a great conversation. Is there anything that I've missed that you'd like to touch on as we sort of head towards wrapping up?
No, I would say again, just a tribute to the women that that just, you know, gave themselves and poured themselves into it. Not only in the 1950s, in the 1960s, you know, when my grandparents ended up coming, and then my mother-in-law in 1980. And there's still immigrant families coming today, and just to realize, you know, to learn a new language, these things are difficult, but we really, as your children and grandchildren, we really value what you've done for us in paving a way for us, in showing us how to deal with hardship, how to deal with challenge. So I would just like to really show my gratitude to the Dutch women in my life and to all immigrant women out there and children and their husbands too, to everybody. It's not easy, but this is a beautiful, welcoming country. And we all have a heritage and we can share it and learn from each other. And I just think that's a beautiful, a beautiful part of being Canadian.
Well, that's great. A great point to end it, I think. But before we go, we of course do want to know where we can buy the book.
Absolutely, Tom. So I have a website, booksbyjuliasinke.com. So basically my name, Books by Julia Sinke. You can use PayPal, credit card on there to check out. I love getting the orders. I've shipped a few to Ontario, to BC, and then I get to see the names and where they're from. And I like to send in a little personal thank you note. So it's really part of, it feels like relationship to me, sending the books off from here. So yeah, they can find my book there. I have another book. I have this immigration book. And then we're working on a World War I story, a Canadian soldier story, maybe dealing with World War I. So that's the third project that we have, that we're looking into. So we'll see.
Well, we're looking forward to that. Abby and Julia, thank you so much for joining us on the Dutch the Podcast. And we hope you sell many, many, many of Anna's story for everyone in Canada to understand what it means to come here as an immigrant. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Tom.
Tom, really, as often these interviews are, I feel inspired because a story was told that can be related to just about anybody Canadian at this point. Everybody comes from some place to Canada. What a unique way to represent this.
I agree, and the emotions are no different. We're all humans, and we all go through that big jump from one culture to another, mixing the two, living with two identities often. And it's really a lot of Dutch kids came to Canada in the 1950s, and so they're among us. And often you wouldn't even know, right? You bump into someone, and turns out they came here when they were five. They have no accent because they were young enough when they came here to completely integrate. And still they have that story to tell, and often those very strong memories of, in particular, the crossing that also gets addressed, the Atlantic crossing that gets addressed in the children's book.
I will recommend that you find out more by going to the link that we include in the description for the podcast and maybe pick up a copy of the book. What a great idea.
Yeah, and you know, this is one way of telling that story. We've spoken to others. I remember one of our very first episodes, we spoke to Rosemary Sloot, about her paintings. And we put a beautiful book together called Immigrant with Rosemary's paintings. And you can find that on our website at dutchthemedia.com. So please keep an eye out for that as well. There's so many stories I've been told in so many interesting and creative and different ways. And this is one of them. And there's many others.
Tom, I must thank you. I received my copy of Dutch the Magazine digitally.
Well, that's great. Perfect. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for reminding me of that. We have this new digital subscription option. I'm so glad you mentioned that, Mike, because that makes it available for anyone, anywhere in the world. So I know we have listeners everywhere. And of course, they can listen to the podcast because we're on all those different podcast platforms. But it's often been hard. It is hard and it's expensive to ship paper across the sea and across the ocean and all over the world. But especially for that reason, it was almost exorbitant to pay for the mailing of the magazine to, say, Australia or the UK or the Netherlands itself or South Africa. But now you can subscribe to our digital option. It's the same price all over the world for everyone. And you get every 2 months, you get a link to our magazines. And the beauty of it is, it gives you access to our entire back catalog. So we've been publishing for over 13 years now. You can get all those magazines that have been published. And most of the content still as relevant today as it was when it was first published.
Well, it's true because a lot of his evergreen stories, an era featuring an artist. Here's a recipe. If you need daily news, there's many sources out there, but what I think that you've done beautifully is almost encyclopedic, especially in the digital form, because you can search against art. It's just a fantastic approach, Tom. So I'll recommend. By the way, there's no harm in taking a paper copy of the publication. However, the idea is to continue supporting this kind of content, and when it costs so much to provide it in the first place, it's almost self-defeating. So if you'd like to support the show, the magazine, and the content overall, I encourage you to subscribe this way. It helps everybody.
That's great. Thank you for mentioning that, Mike. Yeah, and we're not going anywhere with the print side. I mean, we're going to continue print the magazine for our readers in North America and in Canada and the U.S. Because a lot of people have actually kept those. When you say it's encyclopedic, a lot of people have kept the whole series from when they started subscribing. And there's
I can imagine.
I wish they had those first two copies that have been sold out for many years now. Because when we started, we printed a very low low number because we didn't know where we were going. And we didn't know we'd still be around and thriving 15 years later. So absolutely, print is
Look
still
at that.
Here to stay.
Subscribe and you're an instant collector of rare publications.
There you
what
go.
What can I tell you? All right. Well, listen, Tom, until next time, thanks so much. Don't forget, take a look at DutchTheMedia.com for all things Dutch. And thanks for joining us. We'll catch you right here next time on Dutch the Podcast. See you, Tom.
See you, Mike.